And now, live from the Eagle Newsroom in Bryan, it's Aggie Nation, covering Aggie football since the first game in 1894 and every game since. Talking all things A&M and all the pro and high school sports you want to hear. Aggie Nation on Sports Radio 1150, The Zone.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Aggie Nation, powered by The Eagle, Aubrey Bloom, Richard Kroom, and we're joined in studio, as we have been last Wednesday, by Kevin Matthews, here to hang out, former A&M offensive lineman, former NFL offensive lineman, former all sorts of things, and current other things as well. We're brought to you by MSC Opus. Check out all the great events coming to the season that dreams are made of at mscopus.org. You can go to mscopus.org for all the information on tickets and all the cool events and shows coming in this season. You can call us, 693-1150, or you can text us, 229-1939. And it's Wednesday. I don't know if we're fired up about anything. I don't know if you're fired up yet, Kroom.
No,
you look completely unfired.
Well, I've got a lot of other, you know, I've got a lot of stories to do.
I don't
today.
Need your excuses, Kroom.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You need to get fired up about something. Maybe you're fired up about the one guy. This is behind the curtain a little bit, and Kevin doesn't care about this, but I'm complaining for you, Kroom, because everyone, the reporters have to do these conference calls all the time that, like, you have to, if you'll say you're writing a story, Kroom has to write a story about Mississippi State this week. So he's got to listen to Mississippi State's press conference, and if they don't talk about A&M or he doesn't get the answer that he wants, he's got to go on the SEC conference call, which is this morning, and ask the question or see what they think. Now, the problem with these conference calls, they're fine. You know, everyone asks their questions, you get your answers you want, but there's always like one guy doing a weird story about something you don't care about, and they'll ask every single coach the same question.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a grind, Kroom.
Today's subject was...
Someone out there somewhere is doing a story about private quarterback coaches, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and whether that's good or bad, you know, whether the coaches think it's good or bad.
Yeah.
You know, the head coaches think it's good or bad.
Yeah. So do we know who it is? Did they say who they were?
I can't even remember. But he did, most of the coaches, you know, all the coaches are fine with it. There were a couple that said... They don't rarely ever use them because they feel that they're good enough that the other coaches, you know, that they don't need quarterback coaches.
Kevin, are there like O-line specialist coaches? Did y'all do that in the offseason?
Dad's one, right?
Yeah, you have a pretty good one, I would imagine. But do the other offensive linemen, I mean, is there, you know, we all hear about the quarterback gurus. Are there O-line gurus? Are there people go to in the offseason?
There are. A lot of NFL guys go to a guy out in Arizona. I can't remember his name right now, but he's pretty renowned for getting you on a good eating habit and in the weight room properly. And then you do a whole lot of technical work. And I'm blanking on his name right now, but I know a few guys have gone to him in the off season before.
Wow.
So he kind of combines it because your offensive line coach in an NFL team probably doesn't tell you what to eat, does he?
No, definitely not.
So he kind of combines all that sort of stuff?
You go
maximum out of you?
Yeah, you stay out there, and he does everything.
Wow. See, there you go. I didn't even know that, Kroom. We already learned something.
Not to mention.
There's an O-line guru out there.
You should just go out there now, you especially, because you're a golfer now. You should go out there to Arizona. I mean, you couldn't get any more better golf.
Kroom always brings it back to golf.
Well, it's
amazing how you do
that. How many people golf? Even football players, once they're done, start golfing.
When we make first contact,
yeah,
when we make first contact with an alien race, Kroom's like second question is going to be like, "Hey, you guys golf?
Yeah, you got any golf courses up there?
Yeah, how is the golf on whatever planet you're from?" That is interesting though, because the thing that I've always thought of, I think the guru guys, as far as the technique stuff, you know, as far as, you know, we see the George Whitfield throwing footballs in the sand videos and crap like that all the time. I'm always sort of like, whatever, if you think it helps you, then I guess it does. The only position I've ever said that I can absolutely see the need for specialty coaches is the kicking game, the specialists.
A couple of coaches did bring that up. It's not just quarterbacks. And when they said not just quarterbacks, they brought up punter and kicker.
Yeah, well, because a lot of times, because of the rules and how many coaches you can have, a lot of times staffs will have special teams coaches, but they're not necessarily a punting coach or a kicking coach. So I would think those would be the ones that I could actually see the benefit of the gurus, if you want to call them that. Did you ever go to one? Did you ever go to an off-season? You wouldn't have had to, right?
I've never been to one, no.
Did your dad charge people to come to y'all's house in the off-season?
He does a Matthews O-Line Academy. It's more for geared towards high school O-linemen. Okay. But that'd be something cool to work towards. I'm sure.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure they could get paid pretty nicely if they're working with professional athletes.
You've already got the network. You just need a couple guys. You need your Johnny Manziel. You need to take one lineman from relative obscurity to being like the hot name on the draft boards, and then you're set for life. I mean, pretty much. That's what George Whitfield's on game day every Saturday now.
How much like time would you just work with your dad? Literally just lining up, doing steps, where your hands are, things like that, maybe in the living room even. How much time do you think you spent, like a week or a day doing that? Especially off-season when I know you couldn't do it when he's playing.
Right.
But, like, off-season.
When he was playing in the off-season, we would always lift together, and then straight from lifting we'd go out to the field to do conditioning and O-line work. So, if we ran for half hour, we did an hour of drill work or something like that, and and that was kind of as we grew up. And then obviously when I was in the NFL, he was my O-line coach, so I worked with him.
So when you guys were working with each other, who was the best pass rusher of the Matthews?
I think we only brought the bull rush to each other, but I don't know, whoever was most angry.
Now, you told us before the show that you didn't get to watch Saturday's game live, but you've since watched the offense. What was your thoughts on the offense, his performance in this game, especially the offensive line?
My brother-in-law broke a cardinal rule during the football season and got married on Saturday night, so I missed the game. But I got home and I watched it the next morning, and I was when we finally got the ball, I was happy with the production. I thought we scored fast, and I like the unbalanced line formations that we brought in this game, and I think that's always really confusing for defenses, especially with a no-huddle offense. You get up, and you automatically make an assumption that the center is the middle of the formation. Well, if you flip a tackle over and, start getting guys confused, I thought that they took advantage of that pretty well, and then protection I thought was better. I thought we held on the ball a little bit too long sometimes when the pocket was collapsing, but I didn't see any glaring, mistakes that I might have seen, in the past few weeks.
So you think Kyle held on a couple times?
Well, being an offensive lineman, anyone ever gives up a pressure, it's obviously because the quarterback held on to the ball too long.
Right.
And whether it was due to him wanting to make a play or, coverage, sometimes quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks, can feel the need to make a play instead of just living for the next down. And that's when you see, sometimes bad throws, and not that Kyle had any that I can think of.
Think of a couple of times he held onto the ball a little bit in this game, particularly that I think it was a third down.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the one play that kind of stuck out. You can't take a sack there, and he did.
Absolutely.
The thing I was interested in is – I don't know how much experience you had dealing with the off-balance stuff, but to me, and it's not necessarily that the offensive line hasn't been good or has been subpar, I think they're just trying to find ways to use what they are good at. They've got some good athletes up there, which is why I really liked them involving more screens this week, especially what I would call traditional screens, meaning the running back leaks out of the backfield type screens, not the tunnels and bubbles and all that stuff. I thought that helped the O-line a lot, slow down the Arkansas pass rush. And again, with some of the guys they have up there, Jermaine Ifedi, Joe Cheek, these guys are pretty good athletes. They can get out in space and block somebody. I really like that. I think that's something we're going to see more going forward. Did you think that helped them out a little bit up there?
For sure. The screen game always, slows down the pass rush because, you start knocking a few you know, first downs off of, on screens, and, you know, then the rusher, the bookend rushers have to pay, keep an eye on, you know, the running backs leaking out, like you said. And I thought they did a real good job in screens, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I think screens are one of the hardest plays to be successful on, and I thought they did a really good job of in the screen game.
And that's the first time we've really seen it. Is it for you as well? I mean, yeah, because
it's.
I mean, there was three I can remember right offhand right now.
Yeah.
Screens to Carson.
And you mentioned the unbalanced line. That's also why they've essentially taken a tackle, Coda Martin, and have now made him a tight end. Maybe he'll get a token pass thrown to him or something. but Coda Martin's not going to be hauling in 8 touchdown passes this season. So he's effectively another offensive lineman out there. But again, a really good athlete. In fact, I don't know if you can measure a decathlon of the offensive line, but I would put him right up there with Jermaine Ifedi as far as how good of an athlete he is. A guy that can move a lot. Someday is going to be a really good tackle for A&M, but I thought they used him well this game, as you mentioned, with the off-balance stuff and giving the defense some different looks and helping out the offensive line a little bit, I thought.
Yeah.
We hit us up, 229-1939, if you have questions for us, questions for Kevin, or you can call us, 693-1150. Let's go ahead and go to our first break. When we come back, I don't know, we'll talk some more Arkansas. Maybe we'll talk some college football, pro football. Who knows? Who knows what we'll talk about? Hit us up, 229-1939. We'll be back. It's Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
Here's Brad Beard of Intercon.
When we started Intercon in early 1991, we were well aware that we would be competing with some companies that use unscrupulous techniques to make a quick sale, such as bait and switch, or 40% off if you commit today, or misleading, incomplete quotes. Intercon's practice is to be completely honest and encourage prospective customers to talk to our former customers. We've encouraged customers to get multiple quotes. We are confident and proud of our value proposition for windows, glass, and solar screens. We never want anyone to rush into a decision they will regret in the future. Just remember, warranties are only as good as the people who provide them and are servicing the area when situations arise. This is our home and only marketplace, and we will protect our home turf. You've probably heard the saying, the buck stops here, and that is with me, Brad Beard, president and co-owner of Intercon LLC.
Whether you have new construction or an existing home, let the fine folks from Intercon help your home energy efficiency year-round. Call Brad Beard of Intercon today at 823-3639. That's 823-3639.
St. Joseph Eagle football fans, here's a reminder for you to listen to St. Joseph Eagles football throughout the season on 88.5 FM. St. Joseph Eagle football is brought to you this season by these fine local businesses.
Surf Pro of the Brazos Valley, Strata Auto Repair, Kelly Bird Dozer, and Intech Pest Management.
Listen to St. Joseph Eagles football on 88.5 FM. Special thanks to all of our St. Joseph Eagle football sponsors.
Watercrest at Bryan, voted best of the Brazos Valley every year since opening, and the area's only gated community for those 55 and older, offers a maintenance-free, customizable lifestyle with inspiring amenities. As a proud sponsor of the WTAW Zone Aggie football broadcast, Watercrest at Bryan welcomes you to come see for yourself the value and warm hospitality that awaits you. Come visit or call today, 979-703-7088, or check them out at watercrestbryan.com. Giga Maggies.
When you think of Texas A&M Athletics on the Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Hargrove Insurance, Cherry Ruffino, Coldwell Banker, Agtown Realtors, and Atkinson Toyota in Bryan and Madisonville.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Still Creek Ranch was founded in 1988 as a home for children in crisis situations. Through the past 27 years, a lot has changed. We've added more homes, land, and a school. But our mission of rescuing and restoring children who come from abuse, neglect, and trafficking is still the same. Join us on October 1st at 6 p.m. at our annual fall banquet as we celebrate the great work and restoration God is doing in the lives of these amazing children. For table sponsorships and ticket information, visit stillcreekranch.org. stillcreekranch.org.
Your home for Houston Texans football. Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about
stay. I got to be me.
Welcome back.
You'll never
Aggie
be
Nation.
In doubt. That's what it's all
Richard
about.
Crane.
You can't
Kevin
take
Matthews.
Me for
We're all
granted and smile.
I thought the music was just going to keep going.
I have a question for Kevin.
Oh, God.
You know,
tennis
dog.
Related?
No, it's not tennis related.
That's what I'm fired up about today is all your tennis talk during the breaks.
Hey, you know, you got to stay active, Aubrey. You'll learn.
And at your age, your options are limited. I understand.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out there and, like, run fly patterns for somebody, you know.
But no,
we
not.
Talked about this. We talked about this up there at the game, and we're judging Arkansas's line now. They got called for about 3 or 4 holding calls.
Should have been called for 30 or 40.
But Aubrey's saying,
calls.
Yeah, about that many more. We were talking about, and is it a technique? Is it just something they got away with? Where it was almost like they were grabbing A&M's players and, like, turning them. Like, you know, you guys can't see me, but, you know, they just kind of, like, pick them up. It was almost like they were trying to pick them up and turn them and, like, place them somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously to do that, you've got to hold for at least a second or so. Did you, when you're watching, like you said, you watched afterward, like and maybe you could even go back and forth. Are you watching and did you see those kind of things? Because when you're watching Arkansas with the ball, are you watching the linemen as well?
Yeah. Well, you're generally holding on every single play. And you're
yeah,
just hoping you'll get
that's
caught.
What I told Aubrey.
And as long as your hands are inside and the guy doesn't lean to try to make a play, they're never going to call it. And obviously, you know, Arkansas doing it, you want the flag thrown, but when A&M does it, you know, it's not holding. Mm-hmm. But
do you think maybe it was just more obvious because I know all the linemen are big now, but there's a couple of theirs that are just especially big.
Yeah, if you're just muscling them, mm-hmm. and, you know, like I said, it, at any point when they get redirected, like in a snappy way, mm-hmm. or, you know, they lean and you can see them clearly, you know, they'd be falling down if you weren't holding on to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to call that every time, but, you know, you're trying to hold them every time. And if you can get your hands inside on their chest plate and you can physically turn them, I mean, that's a good block in my book. But
right.
Well, see, to me, what makes...
So you're thinking, you know, Arkansas is doing a good job here.
Yeah.
Because
I want to know...
You're A&M first, but you're lineman second,
right.
or 1B, maybe.
Right.
In Arkansas's case, though, and I wonder if this is a thing that they actually... You know, part of the system there is they do a really good job of what I would call burst holding. You know, it's not like a lot of time. The goal, you know, you try to get your hands inside and hold on to a guy. And I'm doing the hand motions too now, that even though people can't see. But what they do a lot is they'll reach for a shoulder pad and just grab it for a second, just enough to turn the guy, and then get their hands back inside. And it's I'm not saying the ref should call it because it's hard to call that because it's not for very long. But it's that's part of their system. So they use that to. And it's not for very, you know, it's not for a long time. They don't use it to drive a guy 10 yards downfield. It's just to get his weight on the other foot. You know, maybe it's they're trying to run through the A gap, and it's the no. You're going up against Daylon Mack. Instead of his weight on his left foot, if you can get his weight on his right foot, well, then he's not going to be able to make that tackle. And it seems to me like Arkansas. And maybe credit to their offensive line coach that they don't get called for it more,
yeah.
but they seem to do that as a part of their offense. This is what I sort of strategic burst holds. Is that something that you played some different systems, you know, college and the NFL? Are there different, you know, to a lot of people, offensive line is offensive line, but are there different ways of playing? I mean, would that be something that certain teams would do?
I don't know how much it would be, you know. O-line coaches are going to give you any advantage you can to be successful. And when it comes to holding, it's the same thing. You know, my dad had a quote. He'd say, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And, you know, you're not cheating to try to, you know, win. You know, obviously you're cheating to win the game. But, you know, you've got to do it within the confines of your area that you don't get caught. So, you know, when you're holding, yeah, you're trying to do all kinds of things. You know, you see a lot of it in the NFL with centers. Or offensive linemen in general, you get to a point where you feel kind of comfortable, and I think those are just kind of like tricks that you learn as you play that you can, you know, do some quick little whatever, yank a guy in a different direction, you know, it'll work, it won't get called. And I'm sure that their O-line coach taught some of that stuff, but, you know, and I don't know how long those guys have been there, but, you know, you start playing long enough, you figure out ways to make it easier, you know, because O-linemen are always working smarter, not harder.
Cause like what Aubrey said, I mean, we always hear this about the Denver Broncos in the NFL. It's like their linemen do They do it differently than everybody else, it seems like. Their running game is different. So is there a difference there? Do you notice that? Or is it just kind of like...
Well, I mean, yeah, you do what you're coached. And, you know, there's a lot of... A couple systems that I played in where, you know, we ran the exact same play, but technique-wise, it's totally different. And it's kind of just, you know, your O-line coach teaches it this way. You know, because your running back is used to that way, you know, it's going to open up a different way depending on how you block it and what technique you use. So, you know, I really don't know whether, you know, it could be something they're taught or it could be something that they just picked up and they saw they weren't getting called for holding, so they kept doing it.
It's kind of, we kind of equated it to what we talked about the first week, where if you're pass interference enough. they get tired of calling it. So
yeah,
you know.
It could be that too.
Well, and I saw someone tweet out earlier about it was in the NFL, but I'm sure the same applies to college, that there's fewer penalties at the beginning and the end of games. And that's one thing that, you know, especially on that final drive when Arkansas is trying to take the clock out, they know that it's going to have to be an egregious hold to get called in that situation. So you hold it for half a second longer. And on the offensive line, you know, half a second's all you need, a quarter second's all you need. You just need that one step, you know, to get your running back through there.
Right.
We will, I don't know, we'll see if Arkansas gets called for more holding throughout the season. Well, when do they play one of the SEC's darlings? Do they got Bama coming up here pretty soon? They'll get called 8 or 9 times in that game for holding, probably. I also wanted this, too. Since you played at A&M and also in the NFL, do you think that teams get a reputation for certain penalties and then get called for it more? Because the thing I noticed with I've said this for LSU never gets called for pass interference. It's unbelievable how much their corners can just attack.
Because they got so much respect.
Yeah.
For their secondary.
Yeah. And they do it all the time. They even did the Syracuse game this weekend. I mean, their corners just attack the receiver, and they are almost never called for pass interference, as opposed to, like, some teams get called for that all the time. Do you think that does happen?
Well, I think refs watch film on teams going into game week, just like, you know, players watch other players. And they definitely have, you know, printouts of, you know, what they get called for most. So they tend to look for that more. And, you know, I guess in LSU's, you know, case, if they're not getting called for pass interference, maybe the refs aren't looking for it as much as they would against a team that does get called more. And
so it's like a self-fulfilling thing. Teams get called for holding, so the refs expect them to hold, and they call it for holding.
So the refs package when they're going to do an Oakland and Raiders game, it's like this thick. It's like 2 inches thick instead of an inch thick.
Yeah, we're definitely told going into the game, you know, what officiating crew we're going to have, and, you know, they make a point to say, look, this officiating crew has called, you know, however many pass interference calls already, so, you know, we've got to be very conscious of that this week.
That's both NFL and college.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
You're an offensive lineman, but I'm sure, I mean, you know about defensive line as well. One of the things that would drive me nuts these days is the absurd roughing the passer calls that we see all the time. Is that, like, and obviously being around when you played, and I ask this because, you know, you played and you're a bigger guy, you know how hard it is to stop and some of that stuff. There's times when, as a fan, you go, come on, is that really roughing? But the hit is probably more than what we really think it is, right? I mean, it doesn't take much for it to be a pretty big hit, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, everything is going to being so much more safety conscious right now. And, you know, with quarterbacks getting the ball every single play, they're definitely high priority, you know, for the safety rulings. And so when, you know, a guy hits them, they're obviously going to err on the side of caution and throw the flag to, I guess, you know, make you think twice as you're going to hit them, whether you want to hit them or not. But there's always a case that I see where a guy is literally flying through the air and the guy throws the ball and he gets, you know, he lays the quarterback out and it's like, you know, I can't put the brakes on as I'm flying through the air, or, you know, I'm falling down. My momentum is carrying me into you. I can't do anything about it. And, you know,
sometimes you even get blocked into him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, and you get a pass or rough in the pass.
It gets called every week. And, you know, if it's called on A&M, I'm for it, or if it's called against them, then I think you're wrong.
You brought up a good point with that safety thing. Do football players look at it like, well, this is getting a little too safety-oriented? Or, you know, how do the football players look at that?
Well, you know, it's I think sometimes it gets blown out of proportion, and you know the risk you're putting yourself in when you play this game, and you know there's, you know, the risks involved, and you know, but you choose to play, and so you're basically signing a waiver saying that you know that you can get a concussion, you know that you can get, you know, hit late, you know, at a quarterback position or something like that. So I think it's gotten a little bit, you know, it might be a little overdone, but, you know, it's also, I think it's a good thing too.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'm wondering, because this hasn't been an issue for all that long, at least at the forefront of society much, but obviously your brother plays for the Falcons, and he's, second, third year now, and then Mike still playing in college. So just from when you started and what you dealt with to what, you know, they've had to deal with and what people talk about, is that an issue? Is that something that concerns current players of, you know, hey, you know, if they make this change, then I'm all for it because it makes guys safer? Or is it kind of like, because as fans, we hear this all the time as fans, like, oh, this ain't real football anymore, you know, all the crazy stuff like that.
I was going to bring that up with the secondary, because I feel sorry for defensive backs because they can't touch anybody anymore.
It's definitely, I think defenders are definitely more worried about it because they're obviously the one laying the hits most of the time. And it's always, it's frustrating when a guy gets called for a targeting call, when a receiver catches the ball and goes down to protect himself, and, you know, they hit heads. Well, you know, he might have been aimed to hit him right in the chest, but when the receiver curls up to protect himself, he hits him right in the side of the head, and he gets ejected or a big fine in the NFL, and, you know.
I've kind of said it's like the strike zone in baseball. It just seems to keep getting smaller and smaller where you can hit it.
Well, and we're going to have to get to a point where people just don't hit with their helmets anymore somehow. I don't know how they're going to pull that off, but that seems to be the direction there. Because I don't know, like you said right now, if a receiver is about to catch the ball, you almost can't hit him. You've got to, like, find a way to get him down without hitting him, which is probably going to lead to more broken legs and ACL tears. But we'll see as it goes along what people do. We got to go to a break. Kevin, I don't know if you got plans. You sticking around? You can stay for a little bit.
I'll hang around.
All right, hit us up, 229-1939. Whatever y'all want to talk about, we will get to it. Otherwise, we're going to see if we're fired up about anything when we come back. And we will, I don't know, we got other stuff we're going to talk about, too. It's Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
From News Talk 1620 WTAW, I'm Chelsea Reber with a news update on Sports Radio 1150 and the Zone 102.7 FM. The city of Bryan has announced receiving nearly $4 million in grants from the Texas Department of Transportation. That will be combined with more than $1.5 million for two projects that could be under construction as early as the end of next year. One is the first phase of a hike and bike path along South College from Hensel Park to Brookside, a bike lane along Cavett from Brookside to Villa Maria, and sidewalks along College from Brookside to Villa Maria. The second project is installing streetlights along Boonville Road from the freeway to Harvey Road. The City of Bryan's Regional Athletic Complex, better known as BRAC, will be getting 17 additional fields and courts and 1,500 more parking spaces. The multi-year, six-phase, $12 million project has been given the green light by the City Council following a recent staff presentation. Deputy City Manager Hugh Walker says the improvements can be done in whatever sequence the Council wishes.
For example, you may want to say, you know, we need the baseball fields or the softball fields first. Let's jump ahead to phase six.
Mayor Jason Byinski asked for state assistance to get in and out of BRAC from the freeway.
We're going to expect a lot of people to come around the bypass. I don't know if there's anything that can be given in consideration or worked out with TxDOT or looked at by our transportation department to find a easier, friendlier way to get in and out of that park.
The expansion includes four more baseball fields, three for soccer, three for multi-purpose use, two for softball, five pickleball courts, and an all-inclusive playground to accommodate visitors who have disabilities. Today's the day Congress is expected to keep the federal government in business for another 2.5 months. Congressman Bill Flores of Bryan says the House version of a continuing resolution includes a few conditions. For more, go online to WTAW.com. I'm Chelsea Reber on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Hey, want to take my new Toyota Tundra camping this weekend?
Well, that's a nice truck, but we'd be hitting some pretty rugged backcountry.
Well, the Tundra TRD Pro race truck did win the baddest endurance race in Baja. I mean, that's pretty rugged.
It did? I had no idea.
And with my Tundra, I go off-road deep in the woods, towing my wakeboard boat to the lake, which weighs more than your camping gear.
Well, I can't.
And there was that canyon I drove down last week.
Okay, it's tough. So what time do we leave?
Pick you up at 6?
Ouch. That early?
I'll bring you coffee.
Toughness comes standard. The Toyota Tundra with available 381 horsepower V8 and all kinds of creature comforts. It's ready for whatever your weekend brings. Right now, qualified buyers get 0% APR for 60 months plus $2,000 special edition cash and a dependable 2015 Tundra Crew Max Special Edition. Toyota. Let's go places. Tundra TRD Pro Race model driven by professional drivers in Baja 1000 Race. Please use caution in actual driving scenarios. Visit gsdoffers.com for details. Offers available in select states and end 10-5-15.
St. Joseph Eagle football fans, here's a reminder for you to listen to St. Joseph Eagles football throughout the season on 88.5 FM. St. Joseph Eagle football is brought to you this season by these fine local businesses.
Jeff Paradowski, attorney at law, Glockson Family Partnership, Prosperity Bank, and Jason Bayinski, BCR Realtor.
Listen to St. Joseph Eagles football on 88.5 FM. Special thanks to all of our St. Joseph Eagle football sponsors.
School is started, but the heat's still with us. So cool off with these great September specials from your favorite Rattler store. Like Music Mountain Water, only $4.39 a case. And if you're hungry, grab a package of Biggs or David Sunflower Seeds. The 5.25-ounce bag, two for only $2.22. On your way home from another scorching day on the job? Then get to your closest Rattler store and grab any 24-pack of your favorite beer from the fine families of beer from Bud, Miller, and Coors. Rattlers. Friendly. Clean. Texan.
Talking Astros, Rangers, and all things Major League Baseball with Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated. Tuesdays at 11:30 on the Louis Belina Show. Powered by TeamOfNavasota.com.
What they do? They smile in your face.
Welcome back. Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. Aubrey Bloom, Richard Kroom, Kevin Matthews. We're all hanging out, talking about football, tennis, various other things that happen to come up. Well, Kroom's in
this You can start your own tennis thing like Chip does soccer, you know.
Yeah, what Chip is to soccer, well, not exactly, though.
No, because Chip really hates soccer.
Because I'll watch a good tennis match on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's the U.S. Open final.
Chip would never watch any soccer. Maybe U.S. if they were in the World Cup final.
No, because then it would be a lot. At that point, it would be on principle he couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
He might even want to, but he would never admit it, and he couldn't, because at that point, it would be the ultimate principle move. He's not at that point, he can't watch. So I don't think he could. But now, tennis might be my least favorite sport to play of all of the. And when I was younger, I did play a little bit of tennis, but it was just, well, when you're younger, everyone is so bad that you, at most, you're gonna get like a four hit rally going. Yeah. It's like out, you know. Yeah. When you're younger, so then I could just never. It never got going. Trying to see. Well, oh yeah, someone got a text. David Caldwell said, "Love the way Kevin blocked Lamar Houston of Texas when him and Kevin were in college." Yes, you get a little shout-out for your blocking there. Who was the – I don't know if you asked you this before. Who was the hardest guy you ever blocked?
First in college, then in the NFL.
College. I played against Geno Atkins when he was at Georgia.
Ooh, yeah.
D-tackle for Cincinnati.
Was that the bowl game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
okay.
Player.
Well, had to have been Kroom.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah. NFL, I gave up – my only sack in my entire life to Antonio Smith against the Texans.
Okay.
At left guard.
Does that stick with you?
It bothers me because like, this is my only one ever.
Like you could have said, I never had one.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it like, do you remember the whole play, like step by step? You know, the whole – what would you have done differently if you could go back and
– Well, he was an inside shade covering the nose, and we were sliding opposite me, so I was one-on-one. And I set inside, and I just covered him up too much, and he made an outside move and dipped – he ripped on my left shoulder, so my outside shoulder, and just got like a short edge. And it wasn't like a super bad like whiff block or anything like that, but it was just enough. He reached out and pulled Jake Locker down. I remember when it happened, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I finally gave up a sack. Like, it just bothered me. It still bothers me.
Who is the
what was it like in the huddle after that play for you? Or was there a huddle after? Was that the last that third down?
No, there was a huddle. Well, the key, we were down that game, and I was the swing guy. I wasn't even starting, and Steve Hutchison had hurt his knee, so I was in at left guard. And, you know, we weren't that good that year, so we were down, and obviously we were throwing the ball every play. So I was either one-on-one against Antonio Smith or J.J. Watt or someone like that the entire game. And so that was a hard game just because they knew that we were down and going to be teeing off. But
did you ever one of the things I'm on, because every offensive lineman in the NFL is obviously ridiculously strong. Was there like a strongest guy or like someone, you know, we hear all these, what is it, the CBS guy does this like freaks list every year that has all the best, like top freaks in college football. Myles Garrett's one of them this year, mm-hmm. for all the things he can supposedly do. Did you ever have like a freak teammate, whether in college or the NFL, that like, even though everyone in there is literally a top tier, top, you know, 1% of humanity athlete, that person was still that much better than everyone else?
Obviously I played with Vaughn.
I was going to say
he was
Vaughn,
a freak.
Yeah.
Strength wise, there was always guys that could bench 200-300 pounds more than me somehow. You know, I was in the low 400s and those guys were still killing me. But, I'd have to say Vaughn. I mean, that guy.
That Vaughn is pretty. His craziest thing isn't even one of his. Well, it is a physical trait, but it's his like sense of balance. Mm-hmm. He can like be leaning so ridiculously far over to get around a tackle or to get around a block and not fall. I mean, like if I get more than like 15 degrees, I'm going down.
Yeah.
But he can be like on the other side of the, you know, like
you almost feel
cross
like
45.
You almost feel like he's leaning on you. As the tackle, he'd be leaning on you, and if you just stepped aside, he'd fall down, but he doesn't.
Well, that is also – I've noticed that lately, and to me, this might be the hardest play to call right now in football, and that's that because rush-ins have gotten so fast that it is hard to tell when a guy is leaning or getting held. We see this all the time where it looks like a tackle is holding, but he's really not. The guy just is so fast, he ran right through his arm. You know, like he's standing there getting ready to block him, and the guy just runs through him, and it kind of looks like he's holding him from the side and trying to bring him down. This is why I don't think Myles Garrett gets an holding calls called, not on him, but you know what I'm saying, like more often, is because his own speed, leverage, and size makes it look like he's being held all the time. I think that's a hard call to make. Is that something that you've seen?
Yeah, well, then what always gets called is when the tackle's running by, and then they stick a foot in the ground to try to jump and make a play for the quarterback, and then that's when you see like their body twist or torque, and that's when the flags always come out.
Those guys are getting good at that. John in College Station said, I think the block that offensive linemen do on Miles when they block him up high then dive at his knee should be outlawed.
It is outlawed,
and labeled the dirtiest play in football. As long as it's the same guy, you can do it.
Yeah, you can't have one guy high and another guy low. So close to the line of scrimmage. Certain box, right, with the line of scrimmage.
Well, you can cut anywhere. I mean, you can't cut
from behind.
Back facing your arm end zone. And you can't. That was the Brian Cushing rule when he tore his knee up and the guy dove back and blew his knee out. And then, you can't have a guy blocking a guy high and then have someone come in and dive at his knees low.
Yeah, but as long as you're the guy doing the high blocking, you can then, as a short,
then you can go low.
As someone who was 5'3" when they were a freshman in high school and played on the offensive line, that was my only weapon. Was the make them think you're going to block them high and dive down low. That was all I had, Krim. Not a lot of 5'3" linemen out there, so I didn't hurt anybody.
I was
going
to say, how did you make them think you were going to block high in the first place?
No,
when
you like come out,
three?
You come up, you know,
punch them in the face.
5'3" is not that short as a freshman in high school.
Oh, okay,
so it wasn't like I was a 5'3", you know, offensive lineman in college or anything. But that was all I had. If I couldn't get them on the ground by going low, they were going to kill me. That was just how it went back then.
So if there was any scouting of freshman football, they would have had you read right away.
I'd have been absolutely screwed. Yeah. There is no doubt it would not have worked. Let's see. I was trying to think of other things to ask Kevin while he's here. And y'all can text us 229-1939 with your questions, your thoughts, your comments about Arkansas, about A&M, other, you know, teams that A&M still has yet to play. Were there – I'm trying to think how to word this exactly. games that, you know, as an offensive line, you know, you thought, like, this is extra on us this week? Or is it one of those things where it's on you so much every week that there is no extra pressure? Or do you feel that extra pressure sometimes?
You get that comment when you're playing against a team that has a, you know, a stellar front seven or something like that. Like, you know, we're going to have to play a great game to be successful against this team or whatever. But, you know, I've said in the past, I think all the pressure on the O-line is, you know, from knowing that any kind of success comes from offensive line. You know, you're not going to be able to throw the ball or run the ball if the offensive line isn't getting their job done. So, I can't think of examples other than, you know, playing against a really good team that says, you know, we've got to really be focused this week.
Were there particular plays you liked? Was there like a because, I mean, I know your interior line some. Did you like a draw, you know, or like a trap? You get to come over there and just blindside somebody or anything like that? Did you have a particular play that when it got called, you were like, yes, I'm going to nail somebody on this one?
Depending on who I was playing against, I was always just a fan of outside zone plays because I always considered myself a quicker guy. So I loved being able at center, you know, I'd be taking my first step as the ball was barely moving as I snapped it to the quarterback. So I always use that jump to reach guys. And so normally when outside zone calls are played, especially if they're inside like a three technique end, then I got excited about those plays.
Was it good being the center because you could basically never be offsides?
Yeah. And then at my last couple of years, the snap count was on me. So, you know, we were always in the gun and I just look under, I'd get the foot and, you know, I always liked going on two because I even said, you know, I screamed something out or twitched my hand a little bit, and I'd always get someone to jump off sides. So.
Do you we talked about a little about this with Steven. I think we were with you the first week you were here too. But as the season has gone on, and I wonder if Mike has said anything or if Jake says anything, because even though they did some tempo stuff when you were here, it wasn't all the time. It wasn't tempo every down. So y'all did do some huddling at least back then, or whatever. What did Sherman call it? The sugar huddle, the little like sort of mini huddle. But did huddling help? You know, as an offensive line during games, I mean, because there's, you know, say like, hey, I missed that, you know, that kind of thing. I know that they're still standing next to each other, so if they really want to say something, they can. But did you think that helped you, you know, over the course of a game? And now that A&M, you know, doesn't huddle at all ever, has Jake or has Mike ever talked about how they, you know, wish they did or are glad they don't, or, you know, however that works out?
Well, I always liked huddling because it gave you a chance to catch your breath. and then also, you know, a lot of stadiums have the jumbotrons where they'll show the replay. So I'd like to watch myself, especially if I had, you know, a mistake. I wanted to be able to see it or a outstanding play that I could bump my guard and say, check that out.
Or if you made a call and he didn't do right,
yeah.
You could say, see, I told you.
Yeah, exactly. Mike has mentioned before that he thinks it's going to be weird huddling, you know, hopefully at the next level. And I haven't really asked Jake which he preferred. I know that it's nice because you generally get into a groove where you're not getting any more tired, but you know that the D-line is gassed because they're always switching in and out. And, you know, they just don't have – especially if you can snap before they can get substitutions made. So, but I don't know. I think there's advantages to both.
I thought that is an interesting thing that doesn't happen at A&M. Creamy, you had something?
Well, I was just going to say, in that realm, do you find as the game goes on that gets harder to do, or does it get easier to do because the defensive line gets even more tired than you would?
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, you know, I was always most tired at the beginning of the game because all your adrenaline's going, and it almost feels like you're holding your breath while you do the first couple plays. Then you just get into a groove, and, you know, anyone that's played could tell you about it. I don't think unless there's like a big explosive play where you're sprinting downfield or you have you know, a screen or something where you're sprinting. But I generally didn't feel like I ever got more tired. Once I kind of hit my max tired, I just stayed there. But you learn how to, like, you know, adjust to that. And I liked it because, yeah, like you said, you at the end of the game, D linemen are gassed, and you know that you can keep doing it because you don't ever come out. Uh-huh. But you're hoping to take advantage of them not being able to catch their breath.
We talked about this a little bit. I don't know if it was with you or with Cease or with Primo, but NFL this year, basically every player has like a tracker in their helmet or uniform somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if you have an Xbox, you can see how fast all the guys are going and all that kind of stuff. And one thing that I was interested in, and now we have the technology to have that data, is how much slower players are in the fourth quarter than they are in the first quarter. And because we were wondering if it would be worth it. You couldn't do this in the NFL because you don't have enough roster spots. But in college, would it be worth holding a couple guys out until the fourth quarter? Because would they be that much faster than everybody? I mean, like when a guy, and as an offensive lineman, because as you mentioned, defensive linemen get more and more tired as the game goes on. If there was ever a defensive lineman that came in late in the game, let's say because of an injury, even though that guy might not be as good as the first guy, does the fact that he hasn't played as much, I mean, does that offset that at all?
Well, you got to think if they're not playing, I guess they shouldn't be out there. But they have guys, especially in the NFL, that are just pass rush specialists, kind of like, you know, Jared Allen does, or, you know, older guys that are just still bringing it off the edge in the pass game, that they'll come in on third down and they're banking on that, you know, the tackle or guard, whoever's going to be tired, and that you can take advantage of it. But I don't know. I mean, if I was a coach, I figured if a guy was good enough to play in the fourth quarter, you know, if you're holding him out for that, he should be playing, you know,
earlier.
Yeah.
See, I told Albert, with all the commercials they have, all the breaks they have now and stuff, yeah, I don't think that should play as big a part as
well. The only position,
unless you kind of get nicked up during the game or something. Uh-huh.
Well, the two positions, right, I was thinking about were corner. You know, on the perimeter, corners and wide receivers, mm-hmm, and then running back, because that's the one I was wondering about. Especially if you're pass blocking, you're going out, you're running for routes and stuff. I was wondering if having a fresh running back in the fourth quarter, even if he's not as good as your starter, how much difference that would make. But
you always hear the running backs talk about how they want more carries because they always seem to feel like then they're in the groove, yeah, and late in the game they can break something because they've just gotten used to seeing things more, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I think they definitely get into a better groove, you know, running the ball. They've gotten to know the defense a little, and it's given them time to know what they can take advantage of.
I think it'd be hard to convince Adrian Peterson that the guy behind him is better than him in the fourth quarter just because he's fresher.
Well, you're not doing it if you're Adrian Peterson. I mean, I don't think that's the case here, Kroom. But anyway, we gotta get to a break. We'll come back, chat about a few more things, hit y'all with some Today in Aggie History. Kevin, thanks for being with us again. Always fun when you come in. We'll do it again here soon. Hit us up, 693-1150 or 229-1150. 939. This is Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
Ice cold Coors Light.
Two here.
Coming. You know, strolling these aisles, I've seen it all. Jaw droppers, nail biters. Up close, it gives you goosebumps.
Come on, up in.
Now you want to feel the gridiron thrills in person? If you're a fan of Rocky Mountain refreshment, you just might. Enter Coors Light's 2015 football sweepstakes. You win. Coors Light jets you and three pals to a game day of all game days. The sights, the sounds, the encased meats. It's pigskin paradise. They're handing off prizes every week all season long. Just grab Coors Light in the beer aisle. Send a photo of the receipt and you could be dancing in these aisles. Coors Light here, born in the Rockies.
No purchase necessary to enter or win. Visit CoorsLightGameReady.com for official rules, including entry instructions and deadlines, odds, prizes, restrictions, and for details to enter without purchase. Ends 1-8-16 at 11:59:59 p.m. Central. Entry period deadlines for select prizes may apply. Entry for grand prize mention must be submitted by 10-25-15. Must be legal resident of 50 USDC, 21 years of age or older. Void where prohibited. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Great beer, great responsibility. Remember, 21 means 21.
When you think of Texas A&M Athletics on the Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Pioneer Steel, Coldwell Banker Agtown Realtors, Rudy's Barbecue, and Garland Shelton Imports.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Tickets are now available for this year's Brazos Valley Fair and Rodeo. Head out to the Brazos County Expo October 16th, 17th, and 18th. There's fun for all with the carnival, rodeo, awesome concerts, shopping, high-flying canines, livestock shows, a tailgate area, and more. Discounted tickets and unlimited ride wristbands available until October 11th at Producers Co-op, Cavenders, and online at BrazosValleyFair.com or call 979-821-1450.
We'll be right back.
There is so much happening in Aggie football this fall, you need to be attending the best live show around to stay up to date and on top of all things Aggie football. It happens every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1 at the Tap, and it's called the Belucci Hour. Get recruiting insight from Billy Lucci and Bryce Jones of Texags Radio every week, twice a week this fall. Plus, enjoy the Tap's delicious $7.99 lunch specials with all the bells and whistles. Make the Belucci Hour lunch a part of your week every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1.
If you're a high school senior with perfect attendance this year, you could win a new Scion from Atkinson Toyota Scion.
Sign up at AtkinsonItPaysToStay.com.
You hear their games every Friday night on the Bryan Broadcasting family of stations. You follow their live scores on Twitter at Zone 1150, and you listen to the podcast of their games on BrazosFootball.com. But now you can really get to know your favorite high school football players with the High School Student Athlete Profile presented by Kelly Bird Dozer. This coming Tuesday, Zone reporter Chelsea Reber sits down with College Station football player Raj Preciado and gets to know more about him on and off the field. Broadcast begins at 1:35 on the Louis Belina Show right here on Sports Radio 1150 and the Zone 102.7 FM. Again, that's the High School Student Athlete Profile, and it's brought to you by Kelly Bird Dozer.
Welcome back. Plume and Croom hanging out on the Wednesday show. Hit us up, 229-1939. Croom, why don't we hit the people a little today in Aggie history?
There you go.
And now, today in Aggie history.
I like the, when I was checking the Today in Aggie History earlier, which is at myaggination.com, you can always go on there to find the latest and different kind of stuff about Texas A&M, maybe news stories you won't see anywhere else, all kinds of good stuff at myaggination.com, but including our tailgate of the week, which should be up probably later today or tomorrow. You can check that out. Hung out with some the Friels family up in Arlington. But
can I give it away? The shrimp?
Shrimp. There was corn. It was a whole deal.
Yeah.
So
you never stopped talking about that.
No, it was good. So yeah, today's Today in Aggie History, September 30th, all the way back in 2010. Croom, Gerard Johnson. Set a record for completions in a game, completing 40 of 62 against Oklahoma State in Stillwater. The game more remembered for being, I have never seen a quarterback, Croom, we talked about this in the newsroom earlier, play so well and so bad in the same game as this game by Gerard Johnson. Oklahoma State won the game 38-35. It was part of that the beginning of the season that kind of went awry for A&M a little bit.
That should have ended at the middle of the fourth quarter every game.
Had the game ended in the fourth quarter, and won a national title that year. But Gerard ended the game, 409 yards, 5 touchdowns. I did, however, notice earlier that record no longer stands. And the guy that now holds it,
You should ask. That should be a question, see if someone can touch
it. They'll look it up. The people cheat.
So what?
The people cheat. Well, we don't have anything to give away either.
Yeah,
but,
that's true. But.
We'll let y'all get during the break. You've got the big break to text us. That record it no longer stands. The record for completed passes in a game was 40 by Gerard Johnson.
For A&M.
Yeah, for A&M. That record is no longer held. It's no longer held by Gerard Johnson. We'll give you all the break to text us who it is held by. And I'm sure some of y'all are going to get it. But we'll do it anyway just for fun. Also today in Aggie history, September 30th, 1944, Bobby Goff set a Texas A&M record, which still remains unbroken, for longest punt, an 86-yarder, Croom. Yeah.
Little wind, maybe?
It had to have been wind.
Or a nice bounce?
They were playing. This is
a hard field with a nice bounce.
This is how long ago this was, because you never knew what was going on with football back then. The 86-yard punt came in a game against Texas Tech, played in San Antonio.
I was going to say, if it was in Lubbock, then you could definitely say it was
They were playing in San Antonio for some reason. And September 30th, 1933, the bugle rank in the Fightin' Texas Aggie Band made its debut in New Orleans when Texas A&M played Tulane. There you go. It's according to the Fightin' Texas Aggie Band by Dawn and Mary Jo Powell. So there you go. The bugle rank, the 12 seniors that do the, you know what I'm talking about.
A lot of football stuff there.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
A lot this of time of year. On
this
the,
time of year, there's lots of Aggie football history. So check that out, MaggieNation.com, and y'all can text us on who now holds the A&M record for most completed passes in a game. When we come back, we'll talk some NFL thoughts, some NASCAR news today, Kroom. How about that?
I don't know what that is.
And then we'll see what else comes our way. 229-1939. Is the text line. If y'all have hot takes, if y'all have things you're annoyed about, if you have overrated teams, which we have not done yet, that'll be in the second hour. I got to come with my four most overrated teams.